welcome to the Make It in Design podcast. I'm Beth Kempton, co-founder of makeitindesign.com, which is home to one of the longest running online design schools in the world. We help creatives from across the globe to thrive in the design industry. Together with my co-founder, Rachel Taylor, an award-winning design veteran, and our wonderful team, we love nothing more than to inspire creative people to follow their dreams, grow sustainable design businesses, and do what they love. We've created this podcast to bring you interviews with designers who have made many bold moves and followed their hearts in order to thrive as creative professionals. Many of them have learned life lessons the hard way, and they all share their career highs and lows, wins and challenges, and their top tips for success. These conversations are gold, and you don't want to miss a single episode. So subscribe now, get yourself a lovely cuppa, and settle in for an inspiring chat. You can find out more about our much-loved online design courses and private design community, The Live Hub, at makeitindesign.com, or come and find us on Instagram at makeitindesign. And so, to today's conversation.
There, everyone. I'm Vic Dickinson from Make It in Design, and I'm so excited for today's conversation with Mike Scruton, the Director of Print Technology and Strategy in Adobe's Print and Publishing Business Unit. Adobe has been transforming industries for over 30 years, starting with the print industry. Mike leads a team focused on development in the textile printing space, drawing on his 25 plus years in printing and extensive understanding of creative and production workflows. Mike has been with Adobe since 1997 and has been responsible for many technologies in the field. A native of the UK, Mike currently lives with his family in the San Francisco Bay Area. And at Make It in Design, we've been fortunate to have Mike and his team provide some amazing insights and opportunities for our community of designers. So a huge welcome to the podcast, Mike. I'm so thrilled today to have you as our guest.
It's great to be here, Vic. Thanks so much for the invitation.
No, it's an honour. Thank you. So, Mike, could you start by telling me a little bit more about yourself and what you do and how long you've been at Adobe?
Yeah, well, I graduated in 1992, which seems like a very long time ago now. I had got a degree in computer science from the University of Warwick. So that makes me a software engineer by background. I lucked into the world of printing and design technologies. My first job was working with a competitor to Adobe in Norfolk, which is probably the easternmost end of Silicon Fen, perhaps. But I spent a number of years there working in Norfolk. Eventually, the company that I was running was acquired by Adobe. And so I sort of made the transition from working on things that were alongside Adobe or maybe competed with Adobe to working for Adobe. And as you said, that was 97. Goodness me, long time ago. I just got I got a 25-year bit of Perspex recently because my company was acquired, they back count another couple of years as well. So seems like I've been here forever. But I've spent my entire career looking at the world of printing and printing workflows and how do people get their designs and make them real, make them tangible, make them something you can hold. So it's touched on all sorts of different technologies from printing on paper to 3D printing. I've spent some time there. I've done some work on printing with textiles, as you mentioned. But, you know, it's always been with a view to, you know, how do you get something off the screen and how do you print it? How do you make it real?
That's really interesting. Why do you think you're so interested in that journey?
That's a really good question. Like I said, my background growing up, it was like making things, engineering things. I'm not creative. I can't draw for toffees, quite frankly. Give me a pencil and a pad. And yeah, no, can't do that. Can't draw, can't sketch. I think what the computer allowed me to do growing up and more recently is be precise. You know, you can put a pixel here, you can put a line here, you can line things up. You know, I got a bit of an eye for an aesthetic. I don't know why in some cases. It's kind of been about learning through experience, doing little projects and having to do this or having to do that and using the tools that are around. So I think, you know, for me, empathy is a big thing, right? I don't just want to learn from a textbook. I actually want to do and experience what people are going through, even if I don't really have a creative streak in my body. You know, if I feel that if I can empathize and do things and make things, even if I look a bit rough, then hopefully that gives me the right insight for folks when I'm speaking to them. And, you know, they can bring the creativity if I can help them show them how to use rudimentary tools.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good answer. And, you know, on that note, you know, design and colour education, it's so important to ensure that everyone in the industry is working efficiently within design and colour management. And you've extensive experience in speaking in conferences and educationally. How important is it for you to share that knowledge and those skills?
Oh, I get a heck of a buzz out of it. I'm an introvert at heart. You know, I don't actually like picking up the telephone and speaking to somebody. But I think what I like about speaking at conferences and speaking in front of people is that hopefully I get to bring a little bit of the passion, a little bit of the excitement, a little bit of what's behind the technology, and share that with folks, you know, a bit more perspective. Knowing a lot of people learn by doing, but, you know, I think it's important to know why you do something in a particular way. You can design a menu or a birthday card by following a set of steps, you know, take this, put it here, take this, put it here, take this, put it there. And you can do that. It's a bit like color by numbers. If I did color by numbers, I probably wouldn't actually use the right color on the right numbers, right? Because I'd always want to try and pick a different way of doing it. How would it look if we did this? How would it look if it changed that? And I think, you know, when I'm speaking with people, you know, what I'm getting is, well, how would they do something differently, right? Rather than just following the instructions and coloring by numbers. Because I think that helps me, you know, helps others build a picture of what people are trying to achieve, and hopefully help them craft a better way of solving that problem. A lot of my teams will tell you, you know, well, they'll come to me with this great solution and of something that they're building. It's like, okay, this is the solution, but what's the problem that you're trying to solve? You know, don't try and engineer to a particular solution. Understand how people work, and then try and build something like that. So, for example, when we started doing a lot of work in textiles, yeah, I could read books about it, but actually the best learning experience was actually going to university, speak to a professor who taught textile design and say, okay, how would you teach it? How would you teach it from first principles? And look at it from that perspective and then try and say, okay, well, how could we bring that as an experience, as a way of enabling people to design in that way, but through the computer rather than just go and see what everybody else was doing from a design perspective.
You know, that is a really interesting way to think about it, you know, thinking about the problem before the solution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people listening today could apply that, you know, if they're an individual with a business or, you know, a company, that's a really interesting way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why are you doing this? Why would they buy this thing from you? I mean, it looks nice, but why? I mean, there's an aesthetic perspective, but even when you're buying something that's aesthetic, it's like if you draw cats, all right, and that's what you're good at, then hopefully you know that there are people who want your pictures of cats, all right? If you draw, I can't think of what the breed of cat is that has no fur, and I'm sure there are people who love them, but that's going to be a very, very niche aspect. So, you know, understanding who that audience is. And you're right, absolutely right. You can apply it from a marketing perspective. You can apply it from a business perspective. You can apply it from a design perspective. You know, why are you doing something? It's okay to do something because you like it. And if you're not passionate about it, then, you know, then you've probably got a completely different problem.
Yeah. And, you know, you've worked on some huge projects. You've got this extensive knowledge and experience. So in your opinion, Mike, where is the digital print industry heading? And what are some of the challenges that you might face as a company?
Printing, manufacturing, making in general, I think is becoming or has become more artisanal. And I guess what I mean by that is that, you know, when I got started in the industry in 92, you know, there were lots of companies we were working with were printing newspapers, right? And there was, you know, the ability to print printing a newspaper is a very efficient way of capturing a message and sharing it with a very large number of people and doing it pretty quickly. You know, you used to be able to get a message out overnight, you know, or put a newspaper on a lorry in London at 10 o'clock at night, drive it up to Manchester and distribute it in Manchester, and people can read it the next morning. And newsprint was a very effective way of conveying that. The internet, of course, has made everything so much faster. You know, I can tweet something and you could see it, or somebody in Australia can see it, you know, within milliseconds. And I guess what that really means is that in our world of being creative, in our way of doing design, in our way of doing print, we don't have to make 80,000 of something in order to be able to share it with somebody. Whereas the newspaper model of, you know, 40 years ago was, it was a very effective way of getting this into somebody's hands. And of course, there are very, you know, if you want 80,000 people to wear the same dress, or 80,000 people to have the same, you know, picture of a dogs playing cards in a smoking den on their walls, yeah, you can print that and print 80,000 of them. And how you do that will be in a way to maximize, you know, the revenue you'll make from your picture of dogs playing cards. If, however, you've got an idea for a particular illustration or a project, then, and this is where the artisanal bit comes in, you don't have to be doing it in volume anymore. And one of the things that I like about, you know, using computer and digital technology in doing this is it's really cost effective to take a photograph, for example, and print it on canvas and wrap it around a wooden frame. You know, there are printers that you could have it, you know, in your garage, in your home, you know, if you wanted to do it regularly, in your neighborhood, where you can take some beautiful landscape photograph you've taken, you could retouch it, you could add an illustration, you could do whatever you like, mixed media, and digitally reproduce it. No more expensive printing one or printing 80,000. And that, to me, is what's really exciting. You know, what we've seen from Etsy and others over recent years is the idea of the marketplaces, of how you can connect somebody who can make something artisanally to an audience. And there are many types of website like that today. But what the digital technology is allowing us to do is to scale. You know, we can still make things relatively easy at the click of a button. We don't have to make them in advance. We don't even have to make them before we receive an order. But we know that when we receive an order, we can press a button and have something made for us and share it. So I think that's where the industry is going massively. And it doesn't matter whether or not, you know, you're sitting at home or driving your car listening to this podcast and thinking, right, I'm going to put this on an online store and make something and sell a few of them, or whether you've got this idea for a business making garments and selling them online to tens or thousands of people. You know, the same, digital technology helps you scale easily, but doesn't constrain you to have to do it one particular way.
Like you say, it's so exciting, and it leads me on to the next question, which was around print on demand and how it is so important for designers. You know, more and more of us are setting up independent businesses, like you said. We don't necessarily want to do huge print runs. So it's making that accessible for everybody. So what I wanted to ask you was, in your opinion, how is Adobe keeping ahead of this need from the industry? What kind of strategies are you putting in place for that?
Well, there's a lot of talking to people, which is good because I like talking. Both on the design side and on the manufacturing side. And trying to find where the problems are, where the bottlenecks are. All right. One of the things that we did find was that consistent color reproduction was a problem. You know, something looks right on the screen, but it didn't look right when they made it. And fortunately, that's an area of technology where we've got some expertise. So, you know, a lot of the work that I've been doing recently has been in the area of PDF, you know, the same PDFs that you would use to download, download your tax forms from the Inland Revenue. You know, we're using to accurately describe the colors that we would want to reproduce when reproducing a print on fabric. And using the extra information that we can put in those files and share them all the way from the designer to the manufacturer, whether I say manufacturer, whether that's a desktop printer or whether that's a mill in another country. But putting all the information in that one file, rather than, you know, the alternative would be, say, for example, I'm going to save this as a JPEG and give it to somebody. And there are some inherent problems with that. So if you want one tip to pick out from this is don't use JPEG when you're designing textiles. But working out how we can apply the technology and maybe some stuff that we've learned from other industries, and then how can we bring that into the world of creativity to solve the problems that people are having in those in areas like color reproduction.
Yeah, it's good to know and good tip as well. And in your opinion, Mike, for a design student, a designer just starting out on a limited budget, is there an Adobe product that you, in your opinion, would recommend for them to get?
Yes. Well, remember, I'm not creative, so this is going to colour us very, very slightly. I think a lot of Adobe applications sometimes have a reputation for being complicated, and they're not really. I think you just have to be, look at my experience. My first copy of Photoshop that I ever used was in 1992. It was Photoshop version 2.5 running on a Mac. One of those old Macs where everything was in we're back together again, where everything's in one unit. But it was one of those things that you see on TV about one of the very old early Macintoshes. Yeah. but, you know, I don't use 100% of the features of that product. I didn't in 92, and I certainly don't now. But it stood the test of time, and everything I've learned, I've built on it over both 25 years, right? So your question, to be fair, was, you know, if you're a student, you're just starting, what would you use? I think I would say it depends. If you want to choose just one, where do you want to go? Or what type of designer are you or creative are you? If you're the sort of person that sits back on a sofa and you've got an iPad or something or a tablet and you like sketching, and sketching is your thing, my daughter's that kind of person. She likes Adobe Fresco because it kind of mimics the idea of how you might draw with a pencil or with watercolors or with oils or with whatever. But it's still, when you're designing, you're creating something which is digital and preserves all these different things. You can press delete on something that you drew 5 minutes ago and undo stuff. So it's kind of that fusion of being creative with some of the digital skills. So she likes Fresco. I spend most of my time in Photoshop, particularly, but that's mostly because I do a lot of work with images, you know, with photographs, doing stuff for websites, this sort of thing. So a lot of image-centric stuff. Photoshop is very powerful. It's actually quite affordable as well. If you look at the Adobe photography collection, it's actually relatively inexpensive, and you can get a whole bunch of tools at a low price. So I spend a lot of time in Photoshop. If you're the sort of person who aspires to a career in the graphic arts, and maybe even website design, where you want to be very precise about, you know, where you're going to be placing things on a screen, I love Illustrator. It's probably, in my opinion, one of the hardest applications we have for people to learn, but it will just keep giving and keep giving, and you can make a complete career out of it. One last plug is there is a product called, and I've used this a little, Adobe XD. It's sounds slightly obscure, but XD is really there for just blocking things out and drawing stuff. And it's for like the non-designer. It's designed for non-designers. At least that's how I kind of wrap my head around it. That's something to use. So I've thrown everything out Here we go. What haven't I mentioned? One last thing. The whole suite, you know, if you think you might be doing stuff in mixed media, this past year we've locked down and everything. I did a lot of video. I needed to create a lot of videos. So we've got a lot of video tools as well. And actually that complete creative suite, you know, I might be doing using Photoshop for a website. I might be using Illustrator to... I'm going to refit my bathroom. So I had to do a plan for a bathroom and be able to move things around. Where's the toilet going to go? Where's the sink going to go? Illustrator was perfect for that. And if I need to make a video for some other project I'm doing as well, then the video tools are really, really helpful. So I probably, if I left Adobe today, I'd probably still be subscribing to the whole Creative Cloud plan, because I'd probably use everything at some point or other. But yeah, so not one simple answer.
No, but, you know, it's definitely an investment, and yeah. You know, it's industry standard, it's expected. So if you're wanting to work in design, you would be expected to be working in Illustrator.
I've spoken to a number of design universities, and there's lots of other specialist tools which are available that do certain things really, really well. You know, other products are available and to suit every price point. But when you're looking at what universities are teaching, you know, and they're teaching things that people will be able to use when they go into a job next year, or will be using in 5 years, or using in 10 years' time. Yeah. Then, you know, the time they would much rather teach, from the guys I've spoken to, they'd much rather teach one of these Adobe applications to a designer and know that they're that time that they're investing in learning is going to pay back later.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the type of software that you just need to get in and just get practicing in it. You know, the more you're doing it, the better
you get. Have to use it. You absolutely have to use it. And this comes back slightly to what I was saying about empathy, Vic. You know, I'm the sort of person that learns through doing, right? And it doesn't matter if it was, you know, doing a poster for a parents association thing from my kid's school, or a booklet for the church, or, you know, helping my wife lay out a pattern design because she was creating a quilting pattern, and, you know, we needed to do a layout so that people could cut out the pieces and sew them together, you know. Or, you know, the video was for, you know, we're all in lockdown now, so people couldn't go to church. They wanted to watch a service online. You know, these skills, these projects that I do, and I'm sure you guys would do as well, are about finding a problem that you need to solve, and then finding what's a way of doing this efficiently, right? And if you only ever need to create one poster ever, right, then you'll pick up something and you'll find a way of doing it, and you probably don't want to spend, you know, 40 hours learning a tool for something that you're only ever going to do once. But there are many things I'm sure that we can come across where these skills are going to be useful to you for other projects later on. When I'm designing something in InDesign, for example, I'm laying out a booklet and I'm thinking, you know, how might we want to reformat this later? How might we need to change the words later? You know, the time you spend defining a style and basically building your own template using styles that build on each other, rather than just selecting that bit of text and making it 12 point bold and that bit of text and making it 14 point italic, you know, instead of that, defining styles for headings and paragraphs and emphasis and this sort of thing, I mean, reusing those styles, you know, that requires investment, all right? But you're investing up front for something which is going to make your life easier later on.
Yeah, definitely. Really good words of wisdom there, Mike. And I'm going to switch now and ask you, because, you know, we're all fans of Adobe products here at Make It Design. We'll have many of our listeners will be huge Adobe fans. Yeah. So can you tell us, we'd love to know what the Adobe office looks like.
Well, I'd like to know as well, because I've not been there for 18 months because of a small... small coronavirus that you may have heard of. The Adobe offices are similar. They're around the world. The culture is quite similar wherever you were. So if you go to an Adobe office in London or San Francisco or Tokyo, you know, they're recognizable from each other. There is space that people can spend, but free snacks. Snacks and coffee is free. Very important to me. But there's space that people can spend talking to each other. The offices tend to be where the larger number of customers are, because people want to be able to come in and have meetings. Some of them have got training rooms. They are, but what I would say is that the culture, the office is as much the culture of the people who are inside it, right? And that's something which you'll find consistently around the world as well. You know, when the founders created the company 35 years ago in California, then, you know, the integrity of the company was really important to them, and the culture of the company was really important. So, you know, having that in that sort of California lifestyle and then transplanting that around the world, probably, you know, from my perspective, is something which has been a strong thing. So, you know, whether when I travel now to different Adobe offices, you know, I go to an Adobe office in India, right? And yep, there's the free coffee, there's the free biscuits on the side. That's great. Many biscuits as I can eat, as much coffee and tea as I can drink. A lot of the bigger offices have fitness centers. You know, in California, that might be a basketball court and a gym. In India, it might be a cricket square and a gym. So it varies. Food is obviously commonplace as well. We actually, a lot of the bigger offices will have cafeteria as well, so that folks don't have to go and hunt and gather for themselves, because like I said, I'm an engineer. Hunting and gathering isn't something I do, but they will feed you, so you don't have to lose time. But I think my last thought though on that is that, you know, in a period of where we've been working from home, a lot of us, due to coronavirus, you know, we've kind of brought that culture home with us as well. So the idea that, all right, I have a ready supply of tea and coffee in my own kitchen, but I get to choose my own flavors, so that's good. But you know, the idea of how people will relate to people, those conversations we will have, of making time for conversations, you know, but having a meeting and asking how people are, how are they doing, how are they feeling, you know, how are the kids doing, etc. It's a very important part of the culture, whether or not you're in an office or working remotely.
Yeah. It's a really interesting point that, you know, it really boils down to the culture and the people that are there.
Right.
And obviously for you, you've been there for quite a long time. So, you know, it must be a great place to work.
It's straight. Yeah. Yeah. They'll probably carry me out of here in a box. You know, I made the shift to the States 14 years ago. So having worked for Adobe in the UK for 10 years, you know, the shift to the States wasn't that much big of a jump, because I'd been visiting the office there regularly for those 10 years. Like I said, the culture was very similar. It wasn't that much of a culture shock from a work perspective. From a living perspective, absolutely, yeah. Because I'm not living out of a suitcase in a hotel and eating out of restaurants now. You know, you have to find somewhere to live, you know, where the kid's going to go to school. You know, what are you going to do at the weekend? You know, all that sort of thing becomes a different and a change. But the shift of moving, you know, being part of Adobe in the UK to moving, being part of Adobe working in the US, didn't feel like that much of a culture shock at all.
Yeah, interesting. And I'm now going to ask you, if it's okay, about do Adobe run creative or design competitions at any point? Because I'm sure we've got people listening that want to know that.
Yeah. So I've run a couple personally with you guys in the past.
Yeah.
When we wanted to do some nice projects, and that's been fun. Adobe corporately, what we tend to do is we like to try and inspire people to be creative. So what you will see, and the best place to find these things would be on social media. You know, follow Adobe on social media and you'll see these things popping up. They'll happen, and Adobe will set a challenge and maybe provide some assets for you so that you can go and start creating something. So for example, here we are in autumn 2021. There is a project that we're doing with Billie Eilish. Not met her myself. I hear she's quite nice. She's got a song out in a movie at the moment, I think, about something.
Oh, yeah.
with a certain Mr. Bond. But, you know, so they put some assets out there where there's some challenges to create things, you know, discover your look, you know, change her look, do something in this particular style, post stuff on, and then encouraging people to make stuff and post them on social media and share them. Adobe has a platform where we encourage people to post stuff, like post your portfolio. It's called Behance, BEHANCE.net. And people will post their portfolios there and share what they're doing as for inspiration for others. And, you know, Adobe encourages people to post those things and then perhaps gives you a hashtag to put alongside your post so you can share stuff and be seen and be recognized. That sort of thing is relatively common. But, yeah, look out for them. Just follow Adobe on your various social media channels and you'll see those.
And it is a great opportunity. I mean, you mentioned Mike working with us in the past when you've worked with the Live Hub, our members club.
Mm.
And, you know, that was a fantastic opportunity that you gave our students. So I really would say keep an eye out on any of the opportunities Adobe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it comes back to the idea of you're going to learn skills by doing. All right. Yeah. And sometimes it's difficult to get that inspiration. And what shall I make today? What shall I design today? You sit there with a blank sheet of paper and a pencil. You know, what am I going to draw? What am I going to make? And I think that's where some of these little challenges that we set from the different teams come in handy, is because sometimes that gives you the aha, the challenge is to do this. And so, all right, I'll do a project and I'll learn the skills. I'll learn the tools as part of that process. So I think that's one of the reasons that we probably do that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, at a time where designers are looking for alternative streams of income to make money, can you tell us anything about Adobe Stock? Is that something that designers can submit images to sell?
Yeah. I've met a few people who have done this. Just go to stock.adobe.com. And at the top of the screen, you'll see a sell button. And you just click on that. And you can sign up. And I've met people that do this. I met somebody, I was speaking at a conference in Munich, Germany, one of the last shows I did before lockdown. And he owns a printing company, you know, he's a ink under the fingernails printer, but he loves photography. And he takes these photographs and, you know, he needs a copy of an Adobe product to run his printing business, but he loves taking these photographs. And, he discovered Adobe Stock and he was selling a few photos. He didn't sell that many. He sells a few a month. But, you know, he'd got this little bit of extra income that he was using, which basically offset the cost of creating the product in the first place. Not saying that everybody's going to be able to sell something first time out. No. But, yeah, definitely. Adobe Stock is a very good way of making your stuff available.
Yeah, it's definitely something to look into, you know, for looking at them alternative streams.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd just like to hear if you've got any tips in general, because you've got so much experience over the years and, you know, you manage teams on really challenging projects. So I just wondered how you stay on track and how organized are you? And do you ever procrastinate, or how do you eliminate that?
Yeah, I spend my time procrastinating by doing podcasts rather than my day job. I have to force myself to be organized. I used to drown under the amount of emails I had in my inbox. You know, so many pressures pulling me in different directions, and I would lose sleep at night because I was thinking about all these things I was supposed to be doing. Then I went on a course with somebody who basically says, no, don't do that. And I actually became, so religion that I now subscribe to is I have nothing in my inbox.
Yep.
My email inbox is empty. When we joined it, I'm slightly nervous now that I've been speaking to you for 40 minutes and maybe my inbox is full again. But no, I don't have to worry about that because I won't look at my inbox again until tomorrow morning. At least I shouldn't if I follow this practice properly. But what I do there is, though, is rather than my inbox being my dumping ground where everything just piles up and piles up and piles up and piles up, I never find anything, I never know what I'm supposed to be doing, I use it as a funnel of that's where things that I should be doing that need attention but come in. And, you know, stuff that comes into my inbox, I'm either going to read it and delete it. Sometimes I delete it without reading it. Sometimes I will file something. If it's something needs action, I won't necessarily action it now. I will drag it and I'll make it an action item from it. But basically, I should be able to empty my inbox in about 10 minutes. And that's kind of my get up in the morning. What I do first is like empty my inbox in about 10 minutes. The things that need attention, need doing, are in my to-do list now, so I haven't got to worry about them. I'll track them. And when I put them on my to-do list, it's like, well, how urgent is it? Is it something that has to be done today? Is it something that I've got a deadline for 3 months' time? Where is it? So I'm setting dates in there as well. But then what I would then do is, as part of my morning routine or my beginning of the week routine, is drag things from my to-do list into my calendar. So now I know when I'm going to work on something. And I can see when I've got time to work on something and when I haven't got time to work on something. And yeah, I can block out lunch in my calendar. I can block out, I'm going out for the evening. I'm not going to do anything on that. Or I'm going to have a holiday on that day. I'm not going to be doing any work. But that idea of sort of organizing myself by taking my action items and then putting them into my calendar so I can see when I'm going to do them means that other people at work can't book meetings with me at that time. Or, you know, I can decline meetings if they try and do that. If somebody asked to meet with me, and I think you and I did this, I sent you an email link and said, hey, yeah, you can see my calendar and you can see where I've got gaps in my calendar or when I don't have gaps. Now, you don't know, you know, at that time, 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning, you know, was I brushing my teeth? Was I at the gym, which I might put in the calendar if I went to the gym, hypothetically, you know, or was I meeting with the Queen? You don't know, but you can put something in my calendar as well. So you can kind of, I give some people access to that type of thing as well. Yeah. But the other reason that's really helpful is at the end of the week, I'm not a big journaling person. A lot of Americans are into journaling, but on a Friday, you know, I like to go through my calendar for the week and say, okay, what have I achieved this week? What have I done this week? And of course, my calendar now is a way I can look back retrospectively and say, okay, this week I've achieved this, and I write them all down. And actually, I can see it gives you a sense of accomplishment on a Friday afternoon as well, saying, okay, this is what I achieved this week. Well, what do I need to think about for next week? And again, you can sort of refresh your to-do list, move your action items around, put some stuff in the calendar for next week as well. So it's faux organized. It's a sense of organization. It's a system. I don't have to be organized. I'm not organized, but my calendar is.
Right. No, I mean, I'm a lover of a list. And so, like you just said, at the end of the day and then the end of the week, I like to go through and, like you say, that sense of accomplishment because you know what you've achieved and it helps set you up for the weekend. Yeah. So
it's probably actually a shout out to my grandmother. Bless her. She's been passed away, I don't know, 20 years ago, probably more. She was a great one for lists. She had lists everywhere. She'd get one small bit of paper. She'd get a little bit of paper out of a fag packet or something and she'd write a list on it. And she'd list everywhere. But she always knew what she was doing. She was sharp as a pin. When she was supposed to be doing it and, you know, all the bills got paid and all the appointments got made and everything else. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
And with all that in mind, Mike, and that, you know, you obviously live in the San Francisco Bay Area now. What do you do to take time out? Do you get time out?
Oh, that's a good question. I watch a lot of TV, too much. I'm not a workaholic. I do stop work. You know, I like to break in the evening. I can't work. I'm not one of these people that can work from when I wake up at 7 a.m. until when I go to bed at 10. Oh yeah, that's basically my waking hours. But so to relax, I don't work, and I'm conscious about not working, and I don't check work emails of an evening. You know, family time is family time. Yeah. Same for weekends. I stopped beginning of the pandemic. Actually, I realized that I was doing a few emails on a Saturday morning, but when everybody was working from home, the danger was that everybody was working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's not good for you. So physically not working and being conscious about not working I think it's important. Yeah. Yes, you're right. I live in California, so that means the weather's good year round. So it means that I can walk the dog year round without worrying, am I going to get rained on? We could do a bit more rain here, actually. But you can go outside. You can plan to go on a picnic, you know, pretty much any weekend of the year, and no, you're not going to get rained out, which is great. Rain happens a few times a year, but you certainly, nobody, this is a big difference. We want to know the biggest difference between living in the UK and living in the Bay Area. In the UK, you were planning an event, you'd always have a, if wet, this is the plan. Plan. You don't do that here. Yeah. It won't, because if it rains, okay, we'll do something different. We'll cancel that, we'll do something else. But yeah, I watch TV. I love going to the beach, walks on the beach with the dog.
Amazing. And I think it's really important, like you say, about having the separation of work and home life, especially because so many of us are working from home now.
Yeah.
You know, if you are working from home, you can still have that sense of clothes off, you know, business finished.
Yeah. Yeah. It's be very careful. This is something which other people are beginning to say. I've been saying it for a little while, but are you working from home or are you vacationing at the office?
Yeah.
You know, are you sleeping at the office? And, you know, that old sort of political sitcom type thing of you see politicians sleeping in on camp beds in their offices. Or whatever, you know, the idea that you're so invested in your work that you might sleep at work. Well, if you're working at home now, that's basically what you're doing. You are basically sleeping at your office. So making sure you can make that separation, you know, and get that break. And you have to, now you have to do it in your head. It's not because you've got your separate spaces. You know, this space I'm sitting in here to chat to you, this is my office. This is where I do my Adobe work. It's where I do my plans for my new bathroom. You know, it's where I do my taxes on, because that tax season, is it time to fill my taxes yet? In the UK, probably is. I should probably do that. But, you know, but it's where I spend a lot of time. It's where I watch my YouTube videos, you know, the various channels that I follow. It's all in the same space. And I think you've got to be careful about this when you're doing, particularly, and I know a lot of designers, who are looking to get into design. You know, they have a day job. I met somebody who is an accountant for a Wall Street accountancy company, but she likes to design as well. And that's her hobby. That's her project. She's making some additional income from that. But then, you know, she also has to have downtime for herself as well. But she's doing all three of these things. She's doing the downtime and the main job and the side hustle when it's all in the same space. So, you know, maybe that is where you have to make space in the calendar or in your mind to switch off and do something different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And my final question then, Mike, would be, what's the most important advice you have for our listeners? Can be anything.
Oh. I think it's about following your passion. And I know that's cliched. A lot of people would say that, follow your passion. But it's also about being passionate about what you do, whatever that is you're doing. You know, be passionate about it. Sometimes that's a luxury. And I'm very fortunate to be doing a job and have a role that allows me to be passionate about the stuff I do. And I realize that's a very privileged thing. All right. But there's something in your life, even if it's not your main job, maybe it's your side hustle, maybe the side hustle, you know, isn't something you're enjoying, you know, it's the job that you want to focus on, or maybe it's for family, or maybe it's for pets, or maybe it's something that you're a part of, you know, but have something that you are passionate about. And be as passionate as you can.
Yeah, that's really great advice. Yeah, definitely. Can agree with that. Well, Mike, as always, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, likewise. Thank you, Vic. Always good chatting. And thanks to all my Make It in Design friends. Some of you will ping me on LinkedIn and Twitter and places like that. And I do see those and appreciate those shout outs as well. You're a great bunch of people. Keep it up.
Oh, that's great. And I know you've mentioned a few of the places people can check out Adobe during the podcast. Do you want to do it now? And we can share that as well.
Yeah, a couple of things. Do look out for Adobe Max. Adobe Max is our creativity conference. In normal times, it would have been in person. You would have had to fly to Los Angeles. But these days, COVID, virtual. So Google Adobe Max. There's a live event in October. If you're hearing this before October the 26th, you can join it live. But if you've missed out, if you're hearing this late, you can go back and see all the seminars and tutorials and stuff. So it's free. Do it. That's worth checking out. You can follow me on LinkedIn and see what I'm up to. It's not always exciting, but you know, you might learn something about PDF or printing on laser printers or something. But I'm always pleased to hear people there.
Brilliant. Thank you. And we'll share them as well. But once again, thank you, Mike.
That's great. Thanks, Vic. Take care.
So that's all for today. You have been listening to the Make It in Design podcast, and we'll be back soon with more inspiring stories from working designers and other creative people. Until then, check out our free courses and design resources at makeitindesign.com to help you move forward in your own creative journey, or come and follow us on Instagram at Make It in Design for daily colour and pattern inspiration. And don't forget to subscribe to the Make It in Design podcast so you don't miss a single episode. We'll see you again soon.